Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaja ki, Jai Nitai Go Prema Nandi.
So we finally decided on some key memory verses for the next section. I use the ones that you sent me. They're good verses. So the key memory verses for this section, chapters 9 to 16, the canto 7, chapter 5, verse 32. Then there is canto 8, chapter 9, verse 29. And there is Canto 8, Chapter 12, Verse 43.
Can you please repeat them?
Why do I have to repeat them?
The first verse, which one is 7, 5, 32, 8, 12, 43.
What was the other one?
8, 9, 29. Okay.
Now the difficulty is that we're giving the verses for chapters 9 to 16, and tonight we're going to complete chapter 15, which means chapter 16 will complete pretty soon, either tomorrow night or next week probably. Then we have to have our closed book exam probably in the next few weeks, which means you don't have a long time to memorize these verses, so I'm not sure how to solve that problem.
So maybe we can test us for the verses in 1 month.
Yeah, maybe that's a good way to. Any other ideas, suggestions? Just learn them. You think? Okay. All right, we'll just start learning them. You have 2 or 3 weeks to learn this. Learn the verses. And then we'll see. If it's too difficult when it gets the exam, then we'll give everyone a bit more time in their verses or something. So can you start looking for verses for the following section? And have them on time? Give them to me in a week or two.
Okay. And chapters?
17 till 24. Doesn't have to be 8th canto, but if you can't find me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, does everyone have the open book topics? Does anyone need the open book topics? You don't have them? Yeah. You don't have them? Are you doing exams or? You are?
I did last time.
Open and closed?
No. So? Open.
Yeah, so. Okay. And I also have the closed book exams for the last section. So, Prabhupada, you see me after the class. I'll give you your exams back. Okay. So, tonight, we'll go from verses 1 to 36 of chapter 15. Chapter 15, there's very few purports in the chapter until we get to the end of the chapter, and then there's several purports. So we'll read through the whole chapter and we'll discuss the purports. Parikshit Maharaj inquired, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything. Why did he beg 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? And when he got the gift for which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I am very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions." Shukadev Goswami said, O king, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight, Shukracharya, a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. Because of this, the great soul Bali Maharaj became a disciple of Shukracharya and began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had. So, we see in the Bhagavatam, especially in this canto, there are many extraordinary descriptions. So here we hear that Bali Maharaj is being brought back to life by Shukracharya. So this is not possible. It's not possible according to modern understanding. We can't bring someone who is dead back to life. But according to the Bhagavatam, it is happening. Someone who has passed away, the soul has left the body, and then he's being brought back to life by mantra and by sacred herbs. And so this is a Vedic science. Prabhupada says that the Vedic science is subtle. The Asuric science is gross. How do the Asuras deal? They deal with machinery and technological advancement. Just like you'll see in the modern day, they use machines to do things, or they use chemicals to do things in order to do things which were done previously in the Vedic time by mantra. Just like these days, in order to fly, they need machinery. Yeah, airplanes, which are machines, which are
drones.
Yeah, drones are there, like that. But everything is done by technology. It's done by mechanisms, like that. Whereas subtly, previously in the Vedic time, the vimana, pushpa vimana, and different type of vimana, it was done by mantra. You would chant the mantra would elevate the machine, and then the machine could fly through space. Just by the potency of mantra. So it was a subtle science which has been lost. This science is not there anymore. Whereas now we need to do all the same things, we need mechanics. So, in the modern day, it is not possible to bring people back to life. If they tried to do it, they'd have to do it with machinery and chemicals, and maybe one day they'll learn how to do it. In the Vedic time, just by mantra, the soul could re-enter the body could be healed to, in such a way that the body was able to be used again by the soul, and then the person could come back to life. So it's a very subtle thing. And the Bhagavatam describes these extraordinary things. If people in the modern day, if they read these things, they'll say this is just fictitious. It is mythological. It is not real. Because these things cannot be done. So it is not real. Whereas we read it and we believe it based upon practicing this subtle science. So how do we understand these things? How do we believe these things? Because we follow the subtle descriptions which are given in the Vedas of chanting mantra. We see that sound vibration is changing our consciousness. How does sound vibration change our consciousness? Through the potency of the mantras, the Maha Mantra in particular, we see that our consciousness is being altered or cleansed. Therefore we understand these Vedic sciences, they are factual, because we see the effect of mantra. Any points so far?
We missed the previous class also, maybe you mentioned, but I don't even think to the connection. How did Bali Maharaj pass away, sir?
Why are they describing?
Yes.
Bali Maharaj.
In the previous chapter, there was a
mention. Yeah, because the previous chapter is chapter 14. It's a description of the final manus. So if you read through the verses, then it mentions that within the incarnation of a particular manu, Vamana appeared. So then Pariksha Maharaj is asked at the beginning of this chapter, then now tell me about this pastime. How Vamana
so
appeared.
He's straight away asking why did he beg three pieces of land, but there is no mention in the previous chapter about begging three pieces of land.
So just like, if you go to a Bhagavatam class, so it may not be written, but then someone speaks about something and then you hear it. So he's heard about this pastime. It's not the first time he's heard it. So, any other point? What's your point?
Point is that when we take favors from non-devotees, then we always have to repent it. So when we should not take too much favor from non-devotees. We have had in our congregation so many devotees who had come here and they had friends or cousins who had helped them with a PR, but then they were pulling them back from Krishna consciousness. They had a tough time getting extricated from their influence and then still do Krishna consciousness. Because they used to invite them home and feed them all kinds of things, and they feel bad if these guys don't come. If devotees don't go to their house and eat whatever. But they had to go because in the early days they helped them with PR.
Well, Subhasari was a spiritual master of the demons, so he was already a spiritual master.
But I think he was not favorable to the Lord. He says, don't surrender.
That's
giving him wrong.
But he is already a spiritual. Now that Bali Maharaj is accepting him now because of the favor.
But that's again another point where I had a doubt. When he says spiritual master, when God says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi, Ye Krishna Tattva Jane Se Guru Hai. So then Shukracharya, how could he have been a spiritual master when he was not favorable towards God? So only such a person can actually be called as a guru. Only who knows.
Yeah, by us. But if you go to India now, there's many people who are accepted as guru, but they're not Vaishnava. They're Shaivite or they're Shakta or something.
And about Bhishma. You know, like Bhishma gave vow that he's going to protect everyone who is on the throne, you know. So he was bound by the vow, not by the taking favors from Duryodhana.
But he says that no,
he may say that he also gave the vow that he's going to protect the king, whoever is on the throne. He said that's all that he can do. And he said also he has been feeding me and he has, you know, he has been bound by many. It just had to happen like that.
Yeah, because he's a Shaivite. You see pictures of Shukracharya, then they'll be like, so he's not Vaishnava like that. So technically, according to that verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, only a Vaishnava is a guru, bona fide guru. And we also accept that because we're Vaishnavas, so we accept. But if you go to India, then many people are not Vaishnavas, but they're accepted as gurus. So they're not bona fide gurus. So Shukracharya, you could say in one sense. Because they're not bona fide, not Vaishnava.
In India, usually people who are very adept at ritualistic practices and who are not in active material life, but still, you know, all those priests, people sometimes say that they are gurus. But they are professionals.
Yeah. I mean, everyone gets accepted. Kula guru means a family guru, but the guy doesn't actually do anything. So people are very sentimental these days. They accept anyone as being a guru. Okay. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni were very pleased with Bali Maharaj, who desired to conquer the kingdom of Indra. Therefore, after purifying him and properly bathing him, according to regulative principles, they engaged him in performing the jagya known as Vishwajit. When ghee, clarified butter, was offered in the fire of sacrifice, there appeared from the fire a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra, and a flag marked with a lion. A gilded bow, two quivers of infallible arrows, and celestial armor also appeared. Bali Maharaj's grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, offered Bali a garland of flowers that would never fade, and Shukracharya gave him a conch shell. But Maharaj Bali had thus performed the specific ritualistic ceremony advised by the Brahmanas and had received by their grace the equipment for fighting. He circumambulated the Brahmanas and offered them obeisances. He also saluted Prahlad Maharaj and offered obeisances to him. Then after getting on the chariot given by Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj, decorated with a nice garland, put protective armor on his body, equipped himself with a bow, and took up a sword and a quiver of arrows. When he sat down on the seat of the chariot, his arms decorated with golden bangles and his ears with sapphire earrings, he shone like a worshipable fire. When he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs, who were equal to him in strength, opulence, and beauty, they appeared as if they would swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. Thus, after gathering the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaj departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, he seemed to make the entire surface of the world tremble. King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana Garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves and fruit, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial. So even though it says eternal here, it doesn't mean eternal. It means a very long time. Just in case someone is wondering. Beautiful women, protected by the demigods, sported in the gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravakas, and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as Akasha Ganga, and by a high wall, which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. The doors were made of solid gold plates, and the gates were of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishwakarma. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million aeroplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl, and there were sitting places made of diamond and coral. Everlasting, beautiful and youthful women, who were dressed with clean garments, littered in the city like fires with flames. They all possessed the qualities of Shama. So, Mahatma Prabhu,
Shri Krishna Chakravarti Thakur gives a hint of the quality of the Sham woman. A woman whose body is very warm during the winter and cool during the summer, and who generally has very firm breast, is called Shyam.
Okay. So any points? So this is the heavenly planets. This material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world you'll find things which don't exist in the material world. This is not even the spiritual world, these are just the
higher planets called Svarga. So there, the bodies of the people, they are warm in the cooler time, and they're cool in the summertime. So this is like closer to the spiritual world. It's more refined. The higher planets, the heavenly planets, Svarga, they're more in the mode of goodness. And passion and ignorance are less there. So the bodies are more subtle, and they have more, they more resemble the spiritual world, the qualities of people's bodies. Very beautiful. People are very attractive. Spiritual world people are very attractive. In heavenly planets, they're also attractive. And their bodies automatically change temperature according to the season. In the spiritual world, it is also mentioned these kind of phenomena take place. So, in the spiritual world, it is mentioned that there are platforms around the trees. Just like you go to India, you'll see there are platforms around trees. So when the residents of Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, when they go and sit on the platforms, if it is cool, then the platform will be warm. And if it is hot, then the platform will be
cool.
So everything is conscious like that. So this is not the spiritual world, but it's describing similar to what it is like in the spiritual world. Because it is getting closer to the spiritual world. The higher planets are closer to the spiritual world. So they more resemble it. But still everything is temporary. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahmana, Bhuvanala, Loka, everything in the material world, from the highest place to the lowest place, is full of birth and death. That is the difference. Spiritual world, there is no birth, there is no death. No old age, no disease. So there is a difference. But here we're hearing about the description of the spiritual world. It is similar to the material world, but it is similar to the spiritual world. The spiritual world is by far superior. And the heavenly planets are by far superior to Earth. Much, much, much superior. Much more beautiful. And much more perfect. But still, it is temporary. Any points?
I guess in the one, I don't know whether it was this section of Bhagavatam, but Prabhupada was describing, had described the heavenly planets in some detail in this purport, and one of the disciples told Prabhupada that, you know, all the devotees are getting very attracted to the heavenly planets, right, in the description. And Prabhupada said, you know, that is not really our goal, is the spiritual world. So he actually even removed some of the purport which he had put in the description, because it was so beautiful to read about the heavenly planets. Some of the devotees were very attracted.
Any other points?
There is death in heavenly planets.
Yeah, everyone dies eventually. The breezes blowing in the streets of the city bore the fragrance of flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed on the streets, which were covered with the white fragrant smoke of aguru, incense emanating from windows with golden filigree. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palaces had flags of pearl and gold. The city always resounded with the vibrations of peacocks, pigeons, and bees, and above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women, who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were very pleasing to the ear. The city was filled with the sounds of mridangas, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned string instruments, all playing in concert. There were constant dancing, and the Gandharvas sang. The combined beauty of Indrapuri defeated beauty personified. No one who was sinful, envious, violent toward other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy could enter that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. So to become a demigod, one has to be in the mode of goodness. One has to develop auspicious qualities. Because you see the description of the demigods, they have higher qualities, they have pure qualities.
So in order to become a demigod, you have to also develop these qualities, and then the next life, then you can take birth in the heavenly planets, have those qualities. Now, the devotees, the Vaishnavas, we don't desire to go to the heavenly planets. So actually, it is mentioned in Puranas that the demigods are lining up to come to Earth to join the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that they can perfect their lives and go back to Godhead. So you see that the devotees, Yashyasti, Bhagavat, Yakinchana, it is mentioned that the devotees have the qualities of the demigods. Or you could say the other way, the demigods have the qualities of the devotees. Because the demigods, quite often, they are taking birth within the Sankirtan movement to take advantage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy so they can go back to Goloka, to the spiritual world. So in order to enter higher realms, you have to develop auspicious qualities. To go back to the spiritual world, the Bhagavatam says in the very beginning, you have to become Niyamatsura, which means free from envy. If you're envious, you can't go back to the spiritual world, because the spiritual world is devoid of envy. So devotees have to become purified. We have to purify our consciousness so that we can enter the spiritual world. Prabhupada says you have to become introspective. We have to see within our consciousness, are we envious of other devotees? Are we envious of anyone? Because if we still detect, if we still see envy within our heart, that means we are still envious of Krishna. And only one person can understand what is in our heart, or two, if you include Krishna. But the only person who understands what's in our heart is us. So we have to look within our heart, what is in our consciousness. See, are we pure? Are we becoming pure? Are we developing the kind of qualities which will allow us to enter the spiritual world, into Vrindavan? Are we becoming Nimatsura, which means free from
envy?
So we have to become free from the base quality. So you see, even in the heavenly planets, even to get to the heavenly planets, you have to become very pure. It is not the demigods have none of these material qualities. They do have the material qualities, but much less. It is like they're much more refined. Srila Prabhupada says that the highest that the Christians can go, people who follow Christianity very strictly, they can go to Swaga, the heavenly planets. So very pious people, they go to the heavenly planets. If you are pious, you go to heaven. If you are sinful, you go to lower regions. So to go to the spiritual world, you have to become more than pious. You have to become pure. You have to become devotional. So this is the process. And by studying the Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, we should also develop pure qualities. So one day we can enter the spiritual world. So, any points?
You read about all these qualities, but in Bhagavatam, so many times the Indra became envious of so many people, no? Like he became envious of Tirtha Maharaj, he became envious of Krishna. So many times we see all these qualities up to the top of the demigod.
So what's your point?
So it's written here, people who are free from envy, who have envy, cannot enter.
Yeah, but I just said 2 minutes ago. It means people who are much less. Like the Bhagavatam said a few verses ago, the trees are eternal. Well, but the trees aren't eternal there. They last for a long time, but they're not eternal. So in the Bhagavatam, or the way Prabhupada's running here, when people are completely, it doesn't mean they're completely free, but it means it's much more reduced. Obviously they're not completely free because they're still in the material world. And we see that there's lust in the heavenly planets, there's envy in the head. So it's not that these things are gone, but they're less. That's the point. So we don't take it literally as Prabhupada. So sometimes Prabhupada writes things in a particular way. It doesn't mean it's literally that, but that's the way he's written it like that. So we have to use our intelligence when we're studying. Any points? Okay. Okay. Bali Maharaj, who was the commander of numberless soldiers, gathered his soldiers outside this abode of Indra and attacked it from all directions. He sounded the conch shell given him by his spiritual master Shukracharya, thus creating a fearful situation for the women protected by Indra. So, from the highest planet in the material world to the lowest, all are places of birth and death. All are places of misery and suffering. Even the heavenly planets, occasionally, the heavenly planets are attacked. They're in the city, everything's peaceful, and suddenly the demons come and they attack. So it doesn't matter where you go in this material world, nothing is perfect. Even Fiji, it is not perfect. You can be there, but then suddenly there's a coup, or there's a cyclone or something. So anywhere in the material world, there is a risk that there may be some difficulty. The only place where there is no difficulty is the spiritual world. It doesn't exist in the material world. Even in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, second canto says, when Brahma created the universe, he was on top of the lotus. And so the lotus began to move very strongly due to the powerful winds in the beginning of the creation. So Prabhupada explains that even Brahma, who is on the highest planet, Satchaloka, even he is sometimes put into difficulty. So it doesn't matter where you go in this world. There's no use spending your whole life and all your energy trying to find a perfect situation, because it doesn't exist. And you see, that's what the non-devotees do in the material world. They try to find a perfect situation, or they spend all of their energy trying to resolve their problems, but you can't. Just a different problem will come. And whatever will come, it will come. Nothing you can do. Even you go to the most perfect place, and then a problem will come. Just like I went to Fiji, because it was we had a festival there. Such a nice place, but then I got sick. So even you're in the best place, but then you get sick and then you can't enjoy it, so then what's the point? So it doesn't matter where you go in the material world, always a problem will come. It is unavoidable. Your karma always gets to the destination before you get there. There's a saying that your forehead always gets to the place before you do. So even if you go to the heavenly planets, your karma's already waiting for you. In the material world, your karma's waiting for you all the time. Any points?
Here we can see that Bali Maharaj is being blessed by Prabhat Maharaj in previous verses. So why is Bali Maharaj, with the blessings of Prabhat Maharaj, attacking the Svarga?
I mean, it's hard to understand, because they're asuras, they're demons. But these particular these devotees have taken birth in demoniac families. Prahlad and Bali, they're pure devotees actually, they're Mahajanas. 12 Mahajanas, Prahlad and Bali. And they're pure devotees, so I don't fully understand why they're getting involved in all of this stuff. Why they're bothering to attack the heavenly planets. I don't fully understand why. But they're taking their birth. He's the leader of the demons. Maybe that's what they have to do. I'm not sure. Any other points?
Actually, they're guiding the asuras. Bali Maharaj is guiding. Guidance for the.
Yeah, I don't know how many of them become devotees, or not mentioned. Yeah, it's a bit hard to understand. Seeing Bali Maharaja's indefatigable endeavor and understanding his motive, King Indra, along with the other demigods, approached his spiritual master Brihaspati and spoke as follows. My lord, our old enemy, Bali Maharaj, now has new enthusiasm, and he has obtained such astonishing power that we think that perhaps we cannot resist his prowess. No one anywhere can counteract this military arrangement of Bali's. It now appears that Bali is trying to drink up the entire universe with his mouth, lick up the 10 directions with his tongue, and raise fire in every direction with his eyes. Indeed, he has arisen like the annihilating fire known as Samvartaka. Kindly inform me, what is the cause for Bali Maharaja's strength, endeavor, influence and victory? How has he become so enthusiastic? Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause of your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Rigu Muni, being pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, endowed him with such extraordinary power.
Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, informed Indra, ordinarily, Bali and his forces could not achieve such strength, but it appears that the Brahmana descendants of Brihumuni, being pleased with Bali Maharaj, endowed them with a spiritual power. In other words, Brihaspati informed Indra that Bali Maharaja's prowess was not his own, but that of his exalted Guru Sukracharya. We sing in our daily prayers, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada, Yasya Prasada, Nagadi Yukto. By the pleasure of the spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement. The blessing of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement. Narottama Dasa Thakura therefore says, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitirite Kariya Akya Parana Kariya Maneyasa. Especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide order of the spiritual master. By the parampara system, one can thus be endowed with the original spiritual power coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eva parampara praptam, Eva raja prasavodam.
So what are the points in this purport?
Prabhu Muni's descendant are giving so much of blessings to the Bali Maharaj. That is one of the reasons, probably most important reason, why he became so strong.
Anything else?
If you want to advance spiritually, you must worship our Guru.
Good. Any other points? So, how does one advance in spiritual life? It is by the blessings of the spiritual master. So Prabhupada would always quote the verse that we sing in the Mangalati in the Guru Rashtika by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kato. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. With the mercy of the spiritual master, one can attain Krishna. So therefore, in order to be successful in spiritual life, and you could even say material life, but especially in spiritual life, you cannot become successful unless you get the blessings of your spiritual master. That is the system. So, how do we get the blessings? By sincere...
Following his orders.
Yeah, by following his orders. Yeah, that's mentioned. And by sincere service. When we are serving, then we attract the attention of the Guru. Prabhupada would say that. Act in such a way that you attract the attention of Krishna. Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. Now, what is the most powerful way to attract Krishna in this day and age?
So the devotees.
Yeah, so the devotees. Yeah. Yeah, it's by spreading. Yeah,
by
chanting the holy name, by serving devotees, but especially by preaching Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada says, if you preach vigorously Krishna consciousness, Krishna will recognize you. You will get special mercy. So that is our desire. Therefore, we have to preach Krishna consciousness or assist in the preaching of Krishna consciousness. And by spreading the Krishna consciousness movement in different ways, then we attract the mercy of Krishna. We get the blessings of the Guru. And you'll see that Prabhupada was like that. Who would he give the attention to? Give the attention to the devotees who would spread the movement. He would recognize them. If you look at the original GBC members, or if you look at the original 11 Ritvik Gurus. Ritvik Gurus means the Prabhupada chose 11 people and he said, you can initiate on my behalf. That was in 1977. Now if you look at why did he choose those 11? Because Prabhupada pointed out that each one of them had taken a risk for Krishna. They were the leading preachers in the society. So Prabhupada recognized their preaching. And by recognizing their preaching, then he gave them special recognition. He gave them special responsibility. So that is how we become recognized by Krishna, by spreading the Krishna consciousness. So that is the system, especially. And Prabhupada says in the purport that by following the order of the Guru, one becomes empowered by the parampara. So if you want to become empowered by the parampara, means if you want to become empowered in your devotional service, Krishna Shakti Vina, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you want to get Krishna Shakti, the Shakti of Krishna, or the potency from Krishna, is coming through the parampara system. So Prabhupada says, by following the instructions of the spiritual master, the spiritual master gives you instructions. You have to follow the instructions. If you follow the instructions, then you get connected to the parampara. You get the mercy of Krishna. That's how you advance in Krishna consciousness. So you have to follow the instructions in order to get the blessings. You get the blessings not just of Krishna, but of the entire parampara system. So we have to follow the instructions purely. And Prabhupada was very specific. As I was speaking to Aniruddha Prabhu before, up in the office. So there's been some controversy, although it's emerging now, there's controversy coming. That, you know, devotees are subtly, they're explaining the philosophy subtly differently to the way Prabhupada was explaining it. Particularly in regards to following the principle of illicit sex. So an article came out recently by a fairly prominent devotee in the society about illicit sex with the small eye and illicit sex with the large eye. And it's becoming a little bit of a controversy now. And it will be addressed. The GBC will have to address it. So in order to become empowered by Krishna, by Prabhupada, then we have to strictly follow the Guru's instructions. And what was Prabhupada's instruction? Illicit sex. Prabhupada's mood in regards to illicit sex, the way he preached, it was quite clear. And Prabhupada didn't write about there's a little eye and a big eye. He was very definite. Prabhupada understood that not everyone is following. But if you want to take initiation within ISKCON, Prabhupada did not compromise the standard. That was his standard. Right? And if you can't follow the standard, that's okay. Right? But then you don't take initiation. So the process should not be watered down. In other words, you have to follow the instruction of the Guru. When someone starts subtly interpreting the instruction of the Guru, then potency is lost. One becomes somewhat disconnected from parampara system, and the mercy of Krishna does not flow as purely or strongly. So Prabhupada clearly says here, if you want to please the spiritual master, you must follow his instructions. And the same thing happens with Krishna. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives his instructions, and then people interpret Krishna's instructions, and then it becomes the potency is lost. So therefore, do not interpret the instructions. Follow the instructions. That's the point. The instructions have been given. And if one follows the instructions of the Guru perfectly, then one gets the mercy of Krishna. So, any points?
Especially about books, Prabhupada was very much interested for distribution of the books. Rohini Sutta, for example, he was first forward in distribution of books, which pleased Prabhupada the most. When he heard this quote, how many people are getting books, it encouraged him so much.
The Prabhupada gave the example of the fly on the lap of the king. Because the king, everyone's looking at the king. So then the fly, he's sitting there and he thinks everyone is looking at me also. So you see the devotees who hang around the guru, they just want to say, I am next to the guru. Just like some devotees, whenever there's a photo of the guru, they're standing right next to the guru. Well, that, who cares? Yeah, they're not doing anything. Just stand. That's what they do, stand next to the guru, who cares? So if you want to serve, if you want to please the guru, you have to do something practical. Not just hang around the guru. What is that hanging around the guru?
I was just thinking about this list of texts. It may not be easy for the grihasthas, you know, you are all the time in the house and this and that. But if it's understood that sense certification, we get attached to the notes. Sanctification means we switch from bodily platform to freedom, from freedom to bodily platform through sanctification. Any. That's why Krishna said in the beginning of every spiritual life, you have to stop sanctification. Otherwise, it's very difficult. But we have to think that once upon a time we have to say no. And we better say it now. Because it will be difficult. Tomorrow will be also difficult. Yesterday was difficult, so we better say it now, no. It will be if we want to be free. And so much better we are getting. It's just if we think what we are getting and what we are losing by giving up this self-certification and we keep that all the time in mind, it will be much easier. For me, it's not difficult because I'm not married, but I can assume it's very difficult for grihasthas. You're in the same house, all the time seeing each other, but it's not because of the rules, because for our benefit, it leave that sanctification. It's not good. It's the first principle which switches us from freedom to bondage is sense gratification. That's how we get attached to the most, through the senses.
Okay. And I was talking to Vishnupriya Mataji. I was asking that how can you do so much of austerity, getting up at 2:30 every day and lot of traveling. She said, I've seen lot of miseries. So, if at all, if I get in the next life, I may get human form. Then what will I do that time? Better do this life time.
It will
take
always
this
be
life
difficult.
Serious.
It's not like giving up sense gratification is not easy unless you have produced from bhakti. Unless you are doing your own properly and doing your sadhana properly, it's not easy to give a sense gratification. But if you do your bhakti properly, you can give a sense gratification.
Just think about the advantages and disadvantages, I think. You know, if someone is a diabetic, if he thinks what complications he can get and if he keeps eating sugar, you know, says, I better give up, you know.
But yeah. Unless the bhakti is high, we cannot use that.
Yeah, you have to have knowledge and conviction.
Okay. Neither you nor your men can conquer the most powerful Bali. Indeed, no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can conquer him, for he is now equipped with the supreme spiritual power, Brahma Tejas. As no one can stand before Yamaraj, no one can now stand before Bali Maharaj. Therefore, waiting until the situation of your enemies is reversed, you should all leave this heavenly planet and go elsewhere, where you will not be seen. Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But when he later insults the Brahmanas, he will be vanquished along with his friends and assistants.
So,
why did Bali Maharaj become powerful? Because he was blessed by the Guru. But then, Brihaspati is saying to Indra, he's following the Brahmanas, so therefore he's becoming powerful. But I can see into the future, because these great sages are Trikalagya. So I can see into the future, and I can see that although he's followed the Brahmanas, he's become powerful, he will also offend them, and he will lose his power. So therefore you can reject him in the future. So Bali Maharaj, and this is one of the important parts of this story, which will be told in the following chapters, one of the important elements of this story is that when the Guru becomes fallen, you can reject the Guru. If the Guru becomes unworthy of following, then we reject. Just like in the Vedic civilization, it's very difficult to give up the guru, very difficult to give up the husband, very difficult to give up the father, to stop following their instructions. That's difficult. But we may stop following the instructions or even reject, right, the guru, the father, the husband, the wife, right, if they stop following the teachings of Krishna. So even though he was the guru of all of the demons, Sukracharya is a very elevated person, right? His planet is Venus. And you see in the morning, if you get up early in the morning, you look over towards the east. And if it's clear, you'll see a very bright star, probably up, you know, about that high. That is Venus, the brightest star in the sky. It's called the bright star. So that is his planet, a Shukracharya. So Shukracharya, he's a very influential person, very powerful Brahmana, right? He is the guru of all the demigods, all of the demons, who are the cousins of the demigods, the Asuras. But he is rejected. The guru is rejected. So you can reject the guru if the guru becomes fallen. So how has the guru become fallen? Because he is telling the disciple not to serve Krishna. So the guru is telling you, do not serve Krishna. Right? Or the guru begins to tell you, initiated devotees can have sex which is small eye but not big eye, like that. Then we have to reject. We have to be very careful about these things. In other words, we have to see if the guru begins to deviate, if the authority begins to deviate, then we have to reject. Right? We always have to check with guru, sattva, and shastra. Three-way checking system. If the guru stops following sattva and shastra, we have to reject. Right? If the shastra, something is shown, someone shows us this is shastra, but it is not in correlation with guru and sattva, then we reject. Right? So there's a checking system, there's a three-way checking system. So if the guru begins to deviate from what sadhu is saying, from what shastra is saying, then we have to reject. Right? So he rejected because there was deviation. Brinda, calm down. He rejected because there was deviation. So normally we don't completely reject. We may reject the instruction, but we don't normally. But he completely rejected the guru. If the guru begins to completely deviate, then we have to fully reject. Any points?
Is there a reason why he became Mahajan, Bali Maharaj? Because he rejected Vraacharya. One of the reasons why he became Mahajan.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons. The main reason why he rejected Bali Maharaj is because... the main reason he became a Mahajan is because he surrendered to Vamana. So there are 9 processes of bhakti mentioned by Prahlad Maharaj: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Darshanam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Now, which one does Bali Maharaj exemplify? Atmanivedanam. Right? Full surrender. He gave everything. Right? So that's why he became Mahajana. Primarily, that's the main reason. Any other points? Shukadeva Goswami continued, "The demigods, being thus advised by Brihaspati for their benefit, immediately accepted his words, assuming forms according to their desire. They left the heavenly kingdom and scattered without being observed by the demons." When the demigods had disappeared, Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana, entered the heavenly kingdom, and from there he brought the 3 worlds under his control. The Brahman descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple, who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, how did he become powerful? By blessings of the Brahmanas. So how do we advance in devotional service? Yeah, blessings of Guru and Vaishnavas. So all the time devotees say, "Give me your blessings, give me your blessings." But as Maharaj was saying, then do something. Sometimes devotees, they just come up and they say, "Just give me your blessings, do something." Don't just stand around saying, "Give me your blessings, give me your blessings," and do something. What did you do to deserve the blessings? Automatically you will get the blessings. You don't have to ask for blessings. Devotees walk up, "Give me your blessings, do something practical." Right? Do some service, you'll get blessings automatically. If the devotee sees that you are serving nicely, the devotee blesses you. Right? You don't have to stand in front of the devotee, "Give me your blessings." No, the devotee has already blessed you. How do you get blessed by the devotee? When the devotee thinks favorably of you. He doesn't have to say anything. He's just thinking like that, and Krishna automatically blesses you. So do something practical. I know myself, a couple of occasions, very advanced devotees, sannyasis in ISKCON, couple of times they didn't even say anything, they just looked at me favorably, and big changes happened in devotional service. And I remember one time a sannyasi looked at me unfavorably, he was upset with me, he didn't even say anything, and problems took place. More than once, actually, I can remember. Didn't even say anything, they just looked at me, but I knew they were upset with me, and then problems. And other times, just looking favorably, didn't even say anything, and then things happened. So that is the blessings, when they look at you favorably. Why do they look at you favorably? Because they're satisfied with your service attitude. Not that you stand in front of them saying, "Prabhuji, please give me your blessings." And do something practical and you'll get the blessings. Any points?
Is the in the chapter 13 text where Bali Maharaj is Indra would be is Bali Maharaj, the same Bali Maharaj? In chapter 13 of this canto, shows a relation of different Indra. Also mentioned Bali Maharaj, is it the same Bali Maharaj?
Yeah, because he becomes Indra in the next Mandanta, the eighth Mandanta, he becomes Indra.
This is the Bali Maharaj.
Same. Okay. When Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices, he gained a great reputation in all directions throughout the three worlds. Thus he shone in his position like the brilliant moon in the sky. Because of the favor of the Brahmanas, the great soul Bali Maharaj, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous and began to enjoy the kingdom. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that by the potency of the Brahmanas, society becomes auspicious. And by the potency of the Kshatriyas, society becomes auspicious. So especially, these two elements are important in society. And Prabhupada points out, what is missing in society at the moment is Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. So Prabhupada says, ISKCON is meant to create a class of Brahmanas, right? To guide society. Good Brahmanas, good Kshatriyas, to guide society. Therefore, where did Prabhupada encourage us to preach? At the universities. Prabhupada liked it if we preached at the universities, because then we will attract Brahminical devotees. Just like the devotees in the 1980s at RMIT, they had a prasada, vegetarian club, like a prasadam club, right, in the university, right? And then they made three devotees, right, from that preaching. They're doing it for about 6 months, right? Prana Prabhu, who was just here, he's still here or he's gone? But, Prana Prabhu, so he's a Brahmana, right? You can see Atul Krishna Prabhu, another Brahmana, and Yadu Shrestha Prabhu, who's the TP of Perth. Right. That was just from preaching at RMIT. Right. They just opened a vegetarian club. Right. Prabhupada said, preach at the universities, preach to the intellectuals, and then you'll attract people who are Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Right. And then they can do the most service. Right. Yeah, we preach to everyone, but especially we need to target. Right. And you see in India, especially the devotees like in Pune and Chaupati, they're targeting, right, the universities, and they're creating a class of Brahmanas who can do so much service and guide others, become gurus themselves. We'll stop here. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki? Okay. So I gave out the key memory verses for this section, so please, if you did not get them, if you came late, then get them off one of the other devotees. And the exam will be at the end of chapter 16, the second exam for chapters 9 to 16. We just finished chapter 15 tonight. We may finish chapter 16 tomorrow night, I'm not sure, see how it goes. So it means the exam is coming, the exam will be in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I just gave you your 3 key memory verses, I'm sorry that they took so long. I was trying to get them for months on end. It felt like I was trying to get them for years. It felt like lifetimes were passing. But finally, I got them. So now you have them. So you have about 3 days to memorize them all. So please memorize them. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.